I vow to develop my compassion.
So Ty is coming. You stand up.
Thank you.
The Sangha is invited to come back to our breathing so that the collective energy of mindfulness can bring us together as an organism, flowing as a river with no more separation. Let the whole Sangha breathe as one body, chant as one body, listen as one body, transcending the boundaries of a delusive self, liberating from the inferiority complex, the superiority complex, and the equality complex.
With us established in mindfulness, we are truly present. For sitting and walking meditation, and for reciting the sutras, may this practice center with its fourfold sangha be supported by the three jewels and holy beings, well protected from the eight misfortunes and the three paths of suffering. May parents, teachers, friends, and all beings within the three realms be filled with the most divine grace, and may it be found that in the world there is no place at war. May the winds be favorable, the rain seasonable, and the people's hearts at peace. May the practice of the noble community, diligent and steady, ascend the ten bodhisattva stages with ease and energy. May the Sangha body live peacefully, fresh and full of joy, a refuge for all, offering happiness and insight. The wisdom of the awakened mind shines out like the full moon. The body of the awakened one is pure and clear as crystal. In the world, the awakened one relieves bitterness and suffering. In every place, the awakened mind reveals love and compassion. Namo Shakyamunaye Buddhaya. Namo Shakyamunaye Buddhaya. Namo
Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is Monday, April the 9th, 2012, and we are on our fifth day of the retreat, Cultivating Happiness. Today we have a session of questions and answers, and the children will have a chance to ask their questions first, maybe 3, 4, 5 questions. And then the teenagers will have a chance to ask their questions. And the children can continue in another room, but the teenagers may like to stay for after their questions, if they like. And after other people, we are down to have our own time to ask questions. We know that a good question can help many people. And that is why we should ask the real question, the question of the heart, the question that has to do with our suffering, our happiness, our practice. And we can always ask a question for a friend of us that is not there. Maybe they have already a few questions in written form, and from time to time we take one of these questions. Sister Pine here will read one of them from time to time, and we will address that question. If during the session you have a question, you might like to write it down on a piece of paper and have someone bring it to Sister Pine. But now those of us who have a question are invited to come and sit with Thay here on the platform. Children, teenagers, young adults and adults, you are invited to come. There will be enough place for 30 people sitting up here. It's very beautiful from here. The Sangha is always beautiful. And we take turn to sit on that chair so that everyone can see us. And the way is that before we ask the question, we should listen to the bell. And everyone will enjoy breathing in and 3 times before asking the question. Okay, the children? Those who have a question, you have a chance to ask about 4 or 5 questions. And teenagers, please come. Especially we want to encourage teenagers to come. And grown-up people also, please come. And during the time, if one question comes to you, you may continue to come up here and sit around. And we know that a good question does not have to be very long. Sangha, this is the first question.
It feels as if my mum is treating my brother in a different way than me, as in a better way.
treats my better than me, my brother better than me.
How can I make it feel fair?
It may be your wrong impression. Your mother may be treating both of you equally, but you have the impression that your mother treats your brother better. That may be wrong. So you have to be sure. You have to observe. You have to ask yourself again whether that is the truth or just your feeling. We should not be sure of anything. So you have to look deeply. That is why we need meditation. Meditation means look deeply. Do not jump right away into a conclusion. Okay, good luck.
Have you ever hurt someone on purpose?
By lack of mindfulness, yes. By ignorance, yes. But there was no intention to make him or her suffer. And I always feel that I don't like to hurt people. I don't want to make a person suffer. But because sometimes you are not calm enough. Sometimes you are not mindful enough, so you say something and do something and make him or her suffer. And that is not on purpose. That is by ignorance, by lack of mindfulness. And I have done that a few times. And I always retreat that. And I vow to myself that I will be more careful and not to do it again next time. Thank you.
Where did you get the ideas for your books?
I did.
Where did I get the ideas for his books?
His book. I write a book because there is a need inside to tell what is in my heart. When you have something in your heart, you would like to share. So there is already something inside. I don't have to go and look for ideas in order to write a book. The idea is already in there, and sometimes it's too many ideas already. You don't have to go and look for ideas in order to write a book. To write a book is a need for you to share your experience of living with other people. And when I write a book, it's like I do conversation with a friend. It's very nice to communicate by the writing. And then, the book All Paths White Cloud, it's a big book about the life of the Buddha. I hope that one day you will read it. That book I wrote thanks to the children, because in many retreats I used to tell children about the life of the Buddha. When the Buddha was a little boy, how he suffered and so on. So, but one day someone said that, "Thầy, why don't you write a book on the life of the Buddha? You have been telling children about the life of the Buddha. Now you just write down all these, the things you have told us." And I said yes. And I sat down and began to write. I did not have to go and look for ideas. It was in the upper hamlet of Plum Village. At that time, in the upper hamlet, there was no central heating system. It's cold. In my room, I had only one wood stove. So I have the wood stove on my left, and I write about the life of the Buddha with my pen. I never write book with a computer or a typewriter. And I toasted my left hand on the stove. It's cold. And on the stove there was a kettle. So I always had hot water to make some tea. And from time to time I would stop writing and make some tea and drink it, enjoy drinking my tea, and then I continue writing the story of the Buddha. I was so happy writing about the life of the Buddha. So happy. Because it was like sitting and talking and playing with the Buddha. So happy time writing. I did not suffer at all. I enjoy the time of writing. It had 80 chapters. And I was sure that if I had a lot of, if I have a lot of happiness in writing the book, my readers will be happy when reading the book also. From time to time, I stop and do walking meditation because I encounter a few difficulties. How to express that? Like the chapter when the Buddha, when Siddhartha had become already a Buddha, and after 1 year of teaching, he was going home and visit his family. And that is one of the difficult chapter to write. You have become a Buddha, a teacher of so many people. But how, when you come to visit your family, you are still a son to your father. You have still a big brother to your sister, a father to your son. You are a Buddha, but you are a human being at the same time. So I had to go and do walking meditation, stop all thinking. And finally, I was able to write that chapter. Another chapter is about how the Buddha convinced the three Kashyapa brothers to abandon the worshipping of the fire and join the practice of mindfulness. And in the sutras, people related that the Buddha used some miraculous powers. And I said, well, the Buddha did not need miraculous power. He had a lot of compassion and intelligence. He must have used only his intelligence and compassion. So I determined to do work meditation first and go back and write and describing Buddha using compassion and understanding in order to help the three Kashyapa brothers. So that was the way I wrote the book. And that is why the book was able to reveal the Buddha not as a god, but as a human being. And when you see the Buddha as a human being, it's very easy for you to relate to him. But if he is a god, it's much more difficult. And that is the story of one book. And there are many books that came from my Dhamma talks. I did not write them. There are disciples, friends who transcribe the talks. And I need only to read it over and make into books. In fact, I do not go and look for ideas to make my books. I just try to arrange so that these ideas will be placed on paper. Thank you. Another question?
When you started learning meditation, did you suffer?
When you
started learning meditation, did you suffer?
No, not at all. Meditation is something very pleasant to do. In fact, when I was ordained as a novice monk, my teacher gave me a book of verses to memorize. And meditation at that time consists in reciting these verses. Each verse has four lines. And you breathe in with the first line, breathe out with the second line, and so on. So it's very pleasant. Like when you put on your shirt, there is a verse for you to read in order to breathe in and out while you put on your shirt. When you brush your teeth, there is one verse for you to recite and to breathe while brushing your teeth. And even when you go to the restroom, there is a verse for you to use while being in the restroom. So when you are about to turn on the light, at that time there was no electricity in my temple. There's no running water in my temple. We novice, we have to go and fetch water from the well. We had to use a kerosene lamp. And every time you light up the lamp, there is a verse for you to breathe in and breathe out. That is the practice of mindfulness. And before you do walking meditation, you read one verse so that you can concentrate on each step. But the first verse of the day is when you wake up. Upon waking up, before searching for your slippers, you should breathe in and out with a verse. And that verse is very nice, see? It goes like this, waking up this morning, I smile. 24 hours are brand new hours are for me. That's when you breathe in and breathe out. And I vow to live each hour deeply and learn to look at people with the eyes of compassion. Breathe in and out and in and out. And only after that, you rise. And when you search for a slipper, your slippers, there is another verse which is very nice. It goes like this. From the morning until the evening, everyone has to look to protect himself or herself. If by accident I step on one of you, I'm sorry. I wish that you will be reborn right away into the land of the Buddha. Because while walking, you might crush a tiny insect below. And that is a very nice, that is a practice of meditation on compassion. And that is one of my favorite verses. From the morning until the end, everyone, every living being have to try to preserve himself or herself. If by accident I step on one of you, I'm sorry. I wish you be reborn right away into the land of bliss. And that is a very good way to cultivate compassion. So that kind of meditation doesn't make you suffer. It makes you very happy. And I learn sitting and walking. Don't think that to meditate you have to suffer. No. Maybe the last question for children.
What's it like in Plum Village?
Come and see. It's difficult to say. I cannot describe. It's like someone who has never eaten an orange. And if he asks, what does it taste like an orange? It's so difficult to tell. So please come and experience by yourself. See you there. The teenagers are invited to come. If the children are interested, they can stay.
From your point of view, what is the meaning of life, the universe, and everything?
Can you say it one more time?
From your point of view, what is the meaning of life, the universe, and everything?
What's point of view? What's the meaning of life, the universe, and everything?
When people look at the cosmos, look at the planets, and look at life in different forms, they ask the question, what is the meaning? So everyone is trying to find a meaning of life. The meaning of life is not something objective that we find, but that is our way to look and to find a meaning. If I believe that if you have an idea about the meaning of life, you might be caught in that idea. So you should allow yourself to be open in order to continue to get in touch with the wonders of life. And you will discover more. And if you have already an idea about the meaning of life, then that moment may be a kind of obstacle for you to go more deeply. One thing that we can notice is that there are so many wonders of life. Your body is a wonder. That flower is a wonder. The planet Earth is a wonder. The stars are wonder. And that it is possible for you to be fully present in order to be in touch with all wonders of life. And that has a capacity to nourish you, to heal you. And by doing so, you might deepen your understanding of the mystery of life. But if you live in such a way that brings so much craving and anger and despair, you will lose yourself and you miss the sense in order to be in the here and the now, in order to be in touch with the wonders of life. To meditate is not only to find a meaning of life, but to heal yourself, to nourish yourself, because all of us need nourishment and healing. And in the process of nourishing ourselves and healing ourselves, our understanding of life will deepen, and we can share with each other. And the Buddha did just that. He had a lot to share with us. And his disciples did very much the same. They continue the work of the Buddha. They try to live in such a way that compassion, love, brotherhood, sisterhood, and peace be possible to make the world suffer less. And during that time, the understanding of life and of the world always deepens. When the children hear the small bell, they may like to stand up and bow to the Sangha before they go. Children, we'll see you later. Turn to the Sangha and get ready to bow. Thank you. Please continue to come and get ready to ask questions.
Hi, Sai. I want to ask you, have you got a cow? Like a special object or something? Like in teen group, we've been talking about cars, like special objects, and I wanted to ask Ty if he's got one, a special thing.
Special car?
Like, no, like a special object, like special item.
No.
Cow.
In this retreat, we have made up efforts in order to identify our cows, in order to learn to release them. But we have also learned that the most difficult, the cows that are most difficult to release is your ideas, especially your idea of happiness. Buddhism is a cow also. If you are not careful, Buddhism become a cow and the Buddha become a cow and you suffer. It depends on you. When I was ordained as a novice monk, I did not know much about Buddhism. A young man of 16, how could he understand Buddhism deeply enough? But there was something like a desire, like an intention to practice, so that you can you can get more freedom and lightness and joy. And there was that kind of conviction that if you continue, you will discover what Buddhism is, who the Buddha is, and you will succeed. There was that kind of conviction that may have been transmitted by ancestors. When I was 14, 15, I already read books of history and so on, and learned that there were times when there was peace in the country, when the people of the country was able to drive out foreign invasion easily, and that time people practiced Buddhism well, that they had enough compassion, they had enough unity and strength, and that is why the practice of Buddhism can help a nation to suffer less and to be strong enough to defend itself from foreign invasion and so on. So that was that conviction that you will find out what Buddhism is and the Buddha was. And you continue to practice mindfulness, concentration, insight, and you continue your process of discovering Buddhism. And one day I discovered that Buddhism is made only of non-Buddhist elements. Buddhism is not something that can exist by itself. It's like a flower. And that day was a very happy day. Buddhism is no longer a cow for you to protect and to defend, because you get insight, and the flower is made only of non-flower elements. and Buddhism is made only of non-Buddhist elements. And you discover also a Buddha is made only of non-Buddha elements. You are free, and you can release the cow called Buddhism, and you can release the cow called Buddha, and you are free from Buddhism. You are free from the Buddha. You feel wonderful. And that is why they said that the cow that are most difficult to release is your idea, your notions, and especially your notion of happiness. So if you are free from your notion of happiness, happiness might come right away to you. And other cows, they are easier to release. I remember a Dharma teacher in Germany, his name is Dharma Eyes. He had followed Tibetan Buddhism before, but when he came to Germany and offered the retreat, he liked the practice so much. So he continued to practice in the tradition of Plum Village. And finally he became a Dharma teacher of Plum Village, teaching in Germany. The first Dharma talk, the first retreat, during the first retreat, they also talk about releasing the cows. Mm. And he was very moved by that. He was a successful businessman. And after the retreat, he said goodbye to us. And I said, Carl, why don't you attend the second retreat? If you like, because you like the first retreat so much, why don't you attend a second retreat that will deepen your practice? He said, yes, Thầy, I like very much, but I have a meeting in Italy, business. But I will try my best in order to come to other retreats. So he said goodbye. But the day after, when we inaugurate the second retreat in Germany, when they came to the meditation hall, he saw Carl Schmidt sitting in the front row. And I was surprised because he had said goodbye to go to Italy for a business meeting or something like that. And he said, Thầy, I was driving south, but halfway, suddenly I said that, well, attending a retreat is more important than attending this business conference. So I made an U-turn. And I was able to release that cow. So it's nice to release the cows. The more cows you release, the freer you become, and the happier you become as a person.
What are the benefits of being a monk?
Uh, the easiest way to practice is to be a monk. It's much easier than to be a lay person practicing in the world. That's the first benefit. Because you live together with many brother monks. And when you hear the bell for sitting meditation, naturally you go with other monks for the sitting. You don't have to make a special effort. But if you live alone in a family, if you want to have a regular practice, and then you have to make a lot of effort in order to to go to the sitting and so on. And when you go to lunch, as every monk around you eating mindfully, quietly, slowly, focusing the mind on the food and on the sangha and not thinking of this or that, so you find yourself doing that very easily. And if you eat alone, you might not be able to do that, and you might like to turn on your television and things like that. So that is why to practice as a monk is the easiest. And then you don't have a family to take care of, spending most of your time to take care. You have only a spiritual family. You don't need a salary. You have a lot of time to practice and to help the people to practice. And it's very satisfying what you want to do. You have the time. You can devote all your time to do it, to practice, to transform yourself, and to organize the practice so that you can help many people to have a chance to practice. And every time you organize a retreat, well, you have a chance to practice with other people who come for the retreat. So there's a lot of benefits. Please come and try. We have a program of for young people, 5-year monastic program for training and service. And you can try to be a monk or a nun for 5 years. And after that, if you like it so much, you can continue for all your life. Or you might return to lay life and live the life of a lay person. And you can also be a lay Dhamma teacher. So that is a new Dhamma door, the 5-year training, monastic training and service. Okay, think about it. By the way, we need a lot of monks and nuns to help us organize retreats like this, because we don't have enough monks and nuns. We need at least 1,000 more. So please sign up.
It says in the first mindfulness training, I think, to never condone any kind of killing. What about things like assisted suicide and things like that, where somebody is terminally ill and their body cannot sustain them and they are constantly in suffering and pain, and things like What about things like turning off a life support machine?
Well, we have to be intelligent in our practice of the trainings. We should not be caught by the form. We have to be flexible. We have to be intelligent. The purpose is to relieve the suffering, to reduce suffering, and not to add more suffering. That is why in the case of terminal illness, and I think we have to meditate together to see whether it is possible to help a person to die peacefully rather than allow him or her, force him or her to continue to live and continue to suffer. Because the purpose is to reduce suffering and not to promote to continue. I think we have to take into account the will of the person, take into account the opinion of the members of families, and the decision will be made upon that kind of consultation. And that person may be able to continue in a healthier form of life, because nothing is dying. That is why we need intelligence, we need openness in dealing with these problems, medical problems. One written question, no? Please come.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, is there a difference between engaged Buddhism and applied Buddhism? And what is your vision for the institutes of applied Buddhism?
Engaged Buddhism is the kind of Buddhism that can be practiced all day long and anywhere. Buddhism as a practice in a practice center should be possible also in our daily life. And that is why between engaged Buddhism and applied Buddhism, there is a very deep connection. They are almost the same thing. Like the practice of mindfulness can be done in the realm of education, the realm of health care, in the realm of politics, social work. So wherever you are, you can always practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, mindful sitting, releasing the tension in your body, dealing with the feeling of pain. Everyone can do that. So when you apply these techniques of meditation, you find out that you don't need to be a Buddhist to call yourself a Buddhist in order to practice these things. Everyone needs to go back to his or her own body, to connect with his own body. This is a very important practice. And the practice of mindful breathing can bring your mind back to your body right away, to get connected with your body. And suddenly you become established in the here and the now, getting in touch with the refreshing and healing elements of life for your nourishment and healing. You don't need to call yourself a Buddhist to do so. And then anyone can practice breathing in a sitting position or lying position to release the tension in their body, to feel better, whether they are a teacher or a student or a politician or a police officer. In fact, we have helped organize a number of retreats for police officers and personals of prison administration, because these people, they suffer a lot of stress, suffering. We learned that the number of policemen in America who took their own life by the gun is more numerous than the policemen shot by the gangsters. It's a very, and we had a Dharma teacher that had been a police officer for a long time. She organized a retreat for police officers in Madison, Wisconsin. It's very moving to see police officers practicing mindful walking, releasing the tension. That is applied Buddhism and engaged Buddhism. And lately, we don't want to use the word Buddhism, because the word Buddhism may be an obstacle. So we try to use the word global ethics, applied ethics. The French President Sarkozy, he wants very much to bring morality back to school. And the teachers in France, they don't know exactly what to teach in that hour. But monks and nuns in Plumlish, we know what to offer in that. So we have trained many groups of school teachers a little bit everywhere, in Thailand, in Malaysia, in Vietnam, in India, in France, and so on. We just had a retreat for educators in London 10 days ago. And if school teachers know how to apply these techniques, they will suffer less in their life as a teacher. They can become happy teachers. They can help their students to suffer less. There are many children who are unfortunate, who could not get learn love and understanding from their family. Their parents did not know how to take care of them, each other, and create a lot of wounds in the child. So if a happy school teacher knowing the practice, he or she can transform the class into a family and give the child a second chance to learn what is love, what is understanding. And according to this practice, it's possible for teachers and students to sit down and listen to each other. The teachers can tell the students their suffering and the difficulties. And the students, if they know about the difficulties and suffering of the teacher, they will not make their life harder. And if the teachers listen to the suffering of the children, the same thing will happen. And when there is a good communication between teachers and students just talking to each other about suffering and difficulties, well, they improve relationship. and then the teaching and the learning will become much easier for both parties. And the teachers can transmit the knowledge and the practice so that children can go home and reconcile with their parents and help reconcile, help their parents reconcile with each other. And that is possible. In our retreats, many young people get transformation and healing. And they went home and help and reconcile with their parents. And they even help parents to reconcile. And they bring their parents to the next retreat. That miracle of reconciliation always happens in our retreats. So if we train teachers, and if teachers master the practice, and then they can very well teach and make the students suffer less and improve the quality of teaching and learning. When we were in California last time, we talked to the governor of California, Jerry Brown. He had practiced meditation before. So he proposed that he help us promote this kind of applied ethics, so that schools in the state can enjoy the teaching and the learning of applied ethics. And we can offer the teaching and practice in a form that is not sectarian, religious at all. And when we addressed the House of Lords in London recently, we also discuss about this, because if there is a law that can help bring that kind of teaching and practice into school, well, we will change our society. And it is our conviction that happy teachers will change the world. And in these days, Plum Village, with all Dharma teachers, monastic and lay, we are doing our best to promote that kind of applied ethics. And we have already come up with the 5 mindfulness trainings in a language that is not Buddhist. And we are working on a non-Buddhist version of the 14 mindfulness trainings. Because these practices are very concrete expression of the mindfulness practice, and based on the insight of interbeing, non-discrimination. So it should be possible to make it global ethic. And each of us, whether we are school teachers or parents, politicians or psychotherapists, we can always help to promote that kind of practice and help change the world.
My question is a little bit long, but I want to make it clear for my Sangha. I understood very deeply what you were saying about being part of a large organism, living, breathing, that nothing is ever lost and we are all connected and flowing through. But then there seems to be this self, this concept of self that we have developed, especially in the last century, and it's able to choose its environment in a different way from a tree. When I look at the tree, it understands that it can live in harmony as part of the organism and not to take too much or too little, and it's very connected. And then we have this consciousness that is seems somehow other, and I want to know, what is this consciousness, this mind? Is it just a part of my physical body, or is it something other, and what is that, and where does it come from?
Well, in neuroscience, they speak of background consciousness, which is very much equivalent to our store consciousness. In Buddhism, we speak of store consciousness as the part of consciousness that operates always day and night. Store is capable of receiving informations, storing informations, and process informations and learn. And when you drive a car, it is store consciousness that is driving, and not your mental mind consciousness. In the beginning, when you learn driving, you have to use your mind consciousness. You have to focus your attention. It's difficult. But in the process of doing so, store learns. And finally, you don't have to think about it, and you can drive like that with your mind thinking about other things. So it is store consciousness that is practically doing most of the things, including driving your car. During the night when you sleep, and if your body feels cold, your hand reached out for the blanket, that's store consciousness, not mind consciousness. Your mind consciousness might be in a dream. You might see something that you are swimming in a very icy lake. You can see things like that, and you reach out to the blanket, and that is a store consciousness. Mind consciousness is much slower. While you drive, and if you encounter something, and if you can avoid accident very quickly, that is store consciousness. It has learned and react very quickly. And if you wait for your mind to make a decision, it may be too late. And that is why we can conclude that mind is slower and more expensive also, because our brain spend a lot of energies, while our body, our store spend much less energy. And mind consciousness is a kind of consciousness that can, from time to time, stop operating altogether, why store continues always. In a case you are in a coma, mind consciousness might stop completely. when you enter a kind of concentration called no mind concentration, you also stop completely your mind. There's no thinking at all. And mind consciousness can operate jointly with the eyes consciousness, ear consciousness, nose, tongue, body. And mind can operate alone when you shut out all the windows of the five senses. Mind can work by its own. And when you practice deep concentration, you can ignore everything happening. You close all the five sense doors, and you are deep in object of meditation with mind consciousness. And mind consciousness can be in a state of concentration. Mind consciousness can be in a state of confusion. The opposite of concentration is
dispersion.
Mind in dispersion. And mind consciousness can be in a state of psychosis. But in the teaching of the Buddha, whether it is mind consciousness or thought consciousness, it has to lean on the body. It cannot manifest without the body. And the body also cannot be on its own without consciousness. So body and mind, they inter-are. It's like the left and the right. If you think that the body can be without the mind, that is wrong. That is not a living body. That is a dead body. So that is why mind must lean on the body to be mind, and body has to lean on mind in order to be body. Mind and body inter-are, and they manifest at the same time. You cannot say that the body first and the mind later. No, that is a process of mutual manifestation. And then if you go deeper, you see that mind is a kind of body, and body is a kind of mind. Your body is, first of all, an object of your mind. Not only your body, but everything else, like a flower, or a tree, or a mountain, you might think that they are objective things existing outside of your mind. But there is only thing you can be sure of. The mountain, the flower, the trees are objects of your mind. And you cannot demonstrate that these things exist outside of your mind. And you still behave as if they exist outside of your mind. But in this teaching, your body, your environment, everything is object of your mind. And that is why in the teaching of the Buddha, there are four realms of meditation. You meditate on your body, you meditate on your feelings, you meditate on your perceptions, and you meditate on the objects of your perceptions, which is object of your mind. Mind is the object of meditation, and objects of mind is an object of meditation. instead of saying mind and reality outside of the mind. And in Buddhism, we always say mind and objects of mind. So mind and objects of mind, they inter-are. Without mind, there is no objects of mind. Without objects of mind, there is no mind. And if you go deeply, we see that the notion of mind and matter should be removed. Our distinction between mind and matter is an obstacle. And nowadays, scientists have discovered that an elementary particle is very intelligent. There is mind in it, and it is mind. Somehow it is mind. So when we look at the planet Earth, if we see that it is a block of matter, we are wrong. We have to begin to see the Earth as a living organism. And to describe the Earth as mind only is wrong. To describe Mother Earth as matter only is wrong. We have to transcend both notions. And the same thing is true with us. In Buddhism, we say nama-rupa, body and mind. But nama-rupa lean on each other to manifest. And yesterday, we learned about action. Our action continues always. And our action is a kind of energy produced by us. And energies can manifest itself into mind-body again, again and again. And it is possible, if we live in mindfulness, we can assure a more beautiful continuation in the future as nama-rupa, mind-body. Mind-body are not two.
My problem is that I love to dance, but I don't know how to dance. And the only time when I remember how to dance is in a nightclub with the aid of different substances that I know are poisonous to my body. And I know this is a problem with my confidence, and I was wondering what your advice would be on building confidence.
So he loves very much to dance, but he doesn't remember how to do it except when he goes to the club and drinks alcohol. And that's what somehow gives him the confidence to do the dancing.
I think that if you love something very much, you'll be able to do it. This is what I found out. The problem is that if you don't like it enough, you cannot do it. But if you really love it, and then you can do it. That's my conviction. By one way or another, you'll be able to do it. There are many ways. And where ever there is a will, there is a way. One written question first, yes.
So, dear Thay, this is a question from a friend named Mary. And she says, dear Thay, how do I help my family deal with the suicide of a father of four children? Right now in the family, there's a lot of rage and hatred and denial of everything good.
I think the solution is understanding. When someone commits suicide, we have the tendency to see him or her as not having enough the fear, the responsibility. We have the tendency to think like that. That person does not have a sense of responsibility. And we suffer because we are caught by that idea. That person may have a lot, a big sense of responsibility. Yeah. But it is, that was cover up, that cannot manifest just because of the amount, the huge amount of suffering in him or in her. And it may be true that that person did not want to commit suicide. He did not want to do it. But something is stronger than him that has pushed him to do it. And that is why to practice breathing and looking deeply, we stop blaming that person for having that kind of desire to kill himself, for having that lack of responsibility. The truth may be that he did not have that desire. The truth is maybe that he had a big sense of responsibility, but the amount of pain in him is so overwhelming. So understanding suffering will remove that kind of anger, rage, and hate. And may bring some insight that if that person was not able to handle the suffering, we will help him to do so. He's still there somehow. He continues own ways, at least in us. If he is not in us, we don't have to suffer. We suffer because he is still in us. That's a reality. That is why we have to begin to talk to him. Dear father, dear friend, I know you are still in me and you suffer. I will help you. And begin to breathe and touch the suffering and listen to the suffering. And if we come to understand the suffering and allow the energy of compassion to arise, we begin the process of healing for us and for him. We do it for him also. He did not have a chance to encounter the practice. No one has told him how to handle this feeling of despair and anger and suffering. So he was a victim. And you should not be angry at a victim. You should only help. So the children should say, hello, father, there's so much suffering, you could not handle it. We will help you. We will practice for you. We will listen and understand the suffering in you and in us. And we will generate the energy of compassion to heal us. And we transform the mud into a beautiful lotus. And I think we need a friend, a brother, a sister in the practice to come and help with love and kindness and show the way of understanding and of reconciliation. Understanding here means, first of all, understanding the suffering. That's the way out. The first noble truth.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, my question is also about consciousness. I wonder if you could tell us something about the relevance and importance of our dreams in our sleep time.
About dreams? If we remember the dream, it might be very helpful because the dream is like other events. It has a meaning in it. Sometimes we are surprised because during the day we did not think of that at all, and yet during the night it appeared like that as a surprise. Maybe our body, our mind, or our ancestors are trying to show something. Maybe an ancestor wants us to look into that matter. Suppose you live in a country that is not at war. People, children enjoy peace. And all day long, you speak about peace and you help people practicing peace. And yet during the night, you saw yourself in a situation of war and you run under the bombs. And you are forced into the army and hold a gun. You cannot imagine that. So if you remember the dream, you see that there must be a cause why the dream come to me. Maybe we enjoy the peace in our country, but we ignore what is going on outside of the country. And people continue to run under the bombs. Children and adults continue to die. So we should not only enjoy peace, but we should be doing something. We should suffer a little bit so that we have that kind of energy. We need some mud in order to grow lotus flowers. And that is why I think each dream has its own message, and we can receive the message from our dreams. And also during the time we are not sleeping, image can come like that very suddenly, and all of them come from the depth of our consciousness, and there must be a cause. They may want to remind us of something. In the practice of mindful eating, when you stay in line waiting for the time you you serve the food. You practice mindful breathing. You look around. You see yourself living in a kind, beautiful environment. You have brothers and sisters in the practice that are practicing mindful breathing, mindful walking, so beautiful, and you enjoy the atmosphere and the energy of peace. And when you take some food and to put on your plate, you say that my plate is empty now, but in just a few minutes, it will fill with good food. And at the same time, you visualize children in the third world, in a world, in a country at war. There are children who is holding a broken plate like this, waiting for hours and hours and do not have anything on it. Suddenly, compassion arises, and there is some suffering. The happiness is that in no time at all, we have good things to eat. The suffering is that there are children at this very time waiting and will have nothing to eat. So that suffering is helpful. It makes us into a good human being. So in touch with getting in touch with suffering is good. And it's why we speak about the goodness of suffering. And everything is like that. A dream is made of non-dream elements. Our suffering, our happiness is the same.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, I'm just wondering, with the Olympics coming up this summer, what is the role of mindfulness and interbeing in an environment where competition is just an integral part of the very nature of that environment?
I think that will be a chance for people to to do business, to make money. To consume. And when someone wins, or someone else will suffer. A competition, that is competition. And that is the comparison between selves. I am better than you, and so on. So that will create a lot of discrimination and complexes. And that is not only about the athletes, but also for the crowd, because we select the athlete that we love and we take side, and we practicing comparing my hero. So that kind of joy, that kind of competition is, we consider it to be a source of happiness. And if we don't win, our hero does not win, and then we suffer. That is Because everything is based on the discrimination between self and non-self. And if we look deeply, we see that everything is in that kind of mood competition, even in the field of education. In the field of education, teachers are being pushed in order to teach more, to work harder, so that the students can get to a more famous school and to come to the top. And that is why both teachers and children have to suffer from stress, overwork, and so on. And even if you get to the top, you have to continue in order to keep that position on the top. So looking deeply, we see that we are going to to the direction of destruction. We destroy our body, our mind, by trying too hard and get burnout. And it's very clear that in this competition, there will be no winner. Those on the top will have to die. And those who have not come to the top, they suffer also. So that's the same thing is true in the field of politics, in the fields of nuclear weapons. We are going to the direction of self-destruction. And that is why we need to wake up. We have to change the course of our civilization. We are going to our own destruction. This is very clear. Our destruction as a race, human race, our destruction as an environment, is very clear. If we continue like this, we go to extinction. There's only one thing that can stop it and change, that is a collective awakening. If you want to save the world, to change the world, you need a huge collective awakening. You cannot change society and the course of history unless you can produce a collective awakening. With that collective awakening, you know that you are going in the direction of self-destruction. And that strong enough to help you to stop and change the way of living. So the Olympics games give us another chance to reflect on this. In this competition, there will be no winner. Everyone will lose. And not we lose as the human race, but we lose as animals, plants, and minerals. The notion of self, self against no self, and it causes a lot of suffering. And that is why the wisdom of non-discrimination, you are me and I am you. You are in me, and I am in you. That insight of interbeing is very important. When I was ordained as a novice, my teacher showed me how to bow to a Buddha. And there was a verse, the one who bows and the one who is bowed to, both are by their nature empty of itself. You should not proud, Buddha, you should not be proud of yourself as a Buddha. And me, I should not be ashamed that I'm not a Buddha. Buddha you are made of only of non-Buddha elements, including me inside of you. And I am made of non-me elements, and you are in me. And when you see the nature of interbeing in you and in the Buddha, you see the Buddha in you and you in the Buddha, that time you touch the nature of interbeing. And when you bow, there is real deep communication. And if the Buddha is only the Buddha, and you only you, real communication is possible. And that is the practice of bowing based on the insight of interbeing. And I think in Christian mystics, there are practitioners who can see that between the practitioner and Jesus Christ. And if they cannot see the interbeing nature between them and Jesus Christ, I don't think that the communication will be deep enough. So the insight of interbeing will help save us. And that needs a collective awakening. So every one of us should work together for that collective awakening. If you are a journalist, work as a journalist. If you are a school teacher, work as a school teacher. We have to produce that awakening. One last question.
Dear Tai, I would not like it, and I'd find it very unhealthy to be in a place where everybody thought the same. And yet, I very often cause myself inner conflict, suffering, and lack of freedom because of my anxiety that I do not agree with everything, be that in a close relationship, or working relationship, or spiritual practice, including here. How can I free myself of this?
When we look at something like a flower, although we are looking at the same thing, but the ways we see the flower might be different. So everyone is looking at that flower, but everyone have a different feeling, have a different scene. So although we do the same thing, but we can do differently already. I don't think that we should try to have people think the same way we think. What we like is that the thinking should be productive. The thinking should bring about more understanding and more compassion. And there are different ways of thinking. It's like meditation, sitting meditation. we should not want the other person to do exactly what we do, because that is another body. The feelings in him or her different. So with intelligence, that person should manage, coordinate his body, his feeling in such a way that the breathing and the sitting can bring the best thing to him or to her. And the way that person does may be different from our way. So we should not expect the other person to do exactly what you are doing. We should only expect that she be able to arrive at more peace, more clarity, more compassion, but the way might be different. So we can be peaceful with that. Because every flower is a wonder. Every person is a wonder. And we should not produce the kinds of thoughts and people like we do with a machine. Mm. So I think what we can say is that what we really want is more peace, more brotherhood and sisterhood, more joy, more freedom, more freedom. And the way to produce these wonderful things may be different, and we should be free enough, tolerant enough, in order for people to be able to do their own way. So you can combine the two. You have this, and you have also that, which is freedom. It's okay. Thank you. We shall have a few minutes for a cup of tea, and then we will gather and have a walking meditation.